G'day friends, my name's Darren, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. I'm sober today through God's grace and the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous works in my life. And I want to thank the committee, Scott and Darren and, oh sorry, Dearen, and Tim and Chris and Barclay and everybody else that's had anything to do with me getting here this weekend. What a great talk to open us up. Just awesome. All I would say, Steve, is, you know, maybe you can take it a little bit less serious with some of your sponsees. Like, you know, I don't know what you're doing, but you might want to have a look at, you know, what you're doing with those guys. Lighten up a bit, possibly. Some of you might be thinking, oh, gee whiz, I really like this guy's accent. I'm here to report that I don't have one. It's all of you that are talking funny as far as I'm concerned. Although I have learnt some local vernacular, I've learnt that "ol y'all" means all of you. It's really, really, really nice to be here. I was here 3 years ago and I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. I've been coming to men's weekends in Sydney, Australia, organising them for this year will be the 9th that I've organised. We had a couple of years off there like you guys did. In fact, I think I had a couple of you zoom down to one of the ones. Bill zoomed into that. It's just real nice to be back face to face, and you can't beat those hugs. You can't beat listening to people giggling their asses off and just having fun in this. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, if I'm not, you know, in the car park giggling my ass off after the meeting, there's something wrong. Like, you know, we have recovered. Like, it's something to celebrate. But I've been asked to tell my story, and I'll apologise in advance because whenever I do, I always get, I'm a depression guy, I'm a self-pity guy. Whenever I tell my story, I go back and touch it just a little bit. So I'll apologise in advance because I was a pretty messed up kid. My sponsor sometimes talks about, the kids coming in these days don't need rehabilitation, they need habilitation. And that's me. Like, I never got to be anything or anyone before Alcoholics Anonymous. I was really messed up. There was some early trauma. I was adopted. I had nightmares of a woman calling out to me. I found out after I met my natural mother that that's exactly what took place. They never let her touch me. And I was taken from that hospital to an orphanage and my mother was a lady who had a hysterectomy. She had cervical cancer, and they took everything in the 60s when you had any sort of cancer like that. And there was no HRT in 1965. You know, there was no hormone replacement therapy, and my home was a battlefield. You know, just two adults raging constantly. And my mum was really, really ill, and on one occasion she tried to smother me with a pillow, on another she tried to drown me in the toilet. It wasn't a fun time, to say the least. And it took many years in sobriety for me to even say that out loud, you know, locked away. Being the kid that I am, like Steve talked about, I had to remove myself from all of you. I had to build up a wall to remain safe. Intimacy became the problem. I'm unable, I'm incapable of letting another human being anywhere near me. I have to masquerade as something other than me. Because who I was got abandoned at birth. Who I was tried to be drowned. Who I was tried to be smothered. Who I was wasn't good enough at the dining room table, to the point my dad used to kick me in the shins until my shins bled. That's why I've got impeccable table manners. I learnt really early that I wasn't okay. Today, you know, if I was a five-year-old today, they'd have me loaded up on Ritalin or something. You know, I certainly had ADD, no two ways about it. And, you know, I was getting into whatever I could. At the age of 10, I had warts on my hands. I was given this wart acid that just somehow had to be laced with chloroform. And the pharmacist told me what chloroform was, so yippee. I'm off sniffing wart acid for the next 4 years. I've got a really big burn on my stomach. That was what happened at the end. I passed out and it went all over me. But it never really fixed me. I found some weed that never really fixed me. And on one particular evening when I was 14, someone handed me a 50-50 mix of Scotch whiskey and cola. And you probably remember how you do that. You get a 3-litre bottle of cola and you pour out half and you slowly pour the whiskey in and you do that and you pass it around. And I pointed that thing to the sky and it went off in me like a bomb. I took 3 or 4 big mouthfuls and it just fixed everything. It went down to my toes, up to the top of my head, out to my fingertips. It was the most spiritual experience of my life. Now, I don't know, you know, at the time what was happening. You know, with hindsight, today I've got words for it, but at the time I had no words. All I thought was, this makes me feel great. But with hindsight, what it did was it removed a few problems that I had. It removed the guilt, shame and remorse. It removed, I'm a loser, I'm a fool, I'm always going to be that way, I'm never going to amount to anything. It removed the self-hatred and the self-pity. But the number one thing that it removed was me thinking about what you're thinking about me. Because that was all I could think about. That you're all standing around thinking about me or talking about me and you're all conferring on how much of a loser I am. Because that's what I thought about me. And alcohol just removed it. Got rid of it in an instant. And you might ask the question, no wonder, you know, this kid chased it, because why wouldn't you want to feel like that all the time? You know, I drove the porcelain bus home that night, which is Australian slang for kneeling in front of the toilet and hugging the toilet, driving the porcelain bus home. And I made that promise that we've all made. You know, I'm never going to do this again. I'm never going to do this again. And within a few short days, I'm planning the next drink. And this is kind of how my head planned it. It said, man, that was a bad night, I agree. And you know, this time we're going to do different. I think the problem is Scotch whiskey. Let's go and find something else. And on the next occasion, I found a very salubrious bottle of sparkling wine. I think it cost about 69 cents. It was called Passion Pop, so it tasted like passion fruit. And I did what I did the time before. I took the lid off it and I drank it all and I waited for the thing to happen. And it happened again. Exactly the same experience. I felt okay. It wasn't that I felt better than you, like some of you have described in your stories. I just didn't care anymore. I just didn't care. It was just okay to be me for the first time. And I got very sick. And a few days later, my brain came up with a plan. It said, you know what, Darren? I've been rethinking what we talked about. And I think, you know what? The real problem is Scotch whiskey and sparkling wine. I think what we need to do is get some vodka. And I don't know where that thought came from, but on through the next 6 months, I just kept sampling different drinks until something stayed down. And I thought that meant that I'd learnt to drink now. But man, right from the start, I'm a really antisocial drinker. I'm the real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde right from the get-go. I'm the guy that's, you know, I pop the lid off anything and take a drink and say, hey, watch this, and within 5 minutes, the sirens. And, it, you know, it really doesn't matter what sort of sirens they are. you know, either I've hurt myself or I've, you know, gotten into some other trouble. Once I lit a fire for some reason, I can't even remember why, and it was the fire brigade came. But that's the type of drinker I am. I'd been charged for 28 criminal offences by the time I was 21. Clearly I'm not a master criminal, because master criminals don't get caught. I'm just a kid that's kicking over letterboxes, getting into fights, stealing a car to drive home four blocks because I'm too drunk to walk. Like, that makes sense to me. It's too cold out. I don't want to sleep here. And, you know, in the very short period of time that I drank, I was in all sorts of drama. I drank for just under 7 years. And as our book suggests, women, I don't know whether I'm a woman, but women and some young people don't need to drink as long as others. And I certainly fit that bill. By the time I got to 21, there was no one left. I drank my way through all my friends, not that there were many. There were no girls left, sacked from work because I couldn't show up. And when I did show up, I was useless, absolutely useless, because I'm sneaking in next door to get a drink. My parents wanted me out of their home. All I could do was grunt at them anyway. That was all I was reduced to by the time I was 21. And, you know, there was, I don't want to have this sound like there was no fun. I mean, every time I drank, it was like, you know, yippee. It was, you know, all bets are off. But I was just waking up with another set of court papers with black ink all over me for a whole stack of awful stuff. And, you know, one particular night we're in a, I was 19 years of age. I had two priors for drink driving. I had a prior for drive disqualified. I had a prior for car stealing. I had all sorts of priors for driving offences. I'm the guy that thinks that I'm from the Dukes of Hazzard. I think that I'm Beau Duke. I'm driving a four-cylinder car all over the town where I live looking for little jumps that I can get all four wheels in the air. And every time I get drunk, I want to get in a car. I just love it. I love the freedom that cars give me. And on one particular occasion, at the age of 19, I found myself underneath this house about 15 miles from home, and it was an illegal gambling den, you know, as you do. And, you know, we're drinking and we're gambling and ran out of money really quick, got out of the house, three of us, and it's pouring rain. How are we going to get home? So we start keying cars in the street trying to get a car open. We got one open and started it up and started heading for home. And, you know, I'm not one of these guys, stolen car, stolen car. I'm like, whee! Pouring rain, and I'm doing fishtails everywhere and get pulled over by the police. And as I said, I'm the last person that needs to be pulled over by the police in a stolen car, driving like that, drunk. I didn't have a license. And it was a sergeant on his way home. And he asked for my license and registration, and I've lost my wallet. And he asked for my name and date of birth and went and looked it up and came back to the car, and he said, step out of the vehicle, and handcuffed me, put me in the gutter. And he rang up the plates on the car. And the name that I gave, because I'm so clever, was Darren Johnson. I just made up a fake surname. And he rang up the plates on the car, and I'm sitting in the gutter praying my ass off. You know, it is certainly true that there's no atheists in foxholes, and I'm praying my ass off to get me out of this one. I'll never do it again. And the guy's like staring at me like, I've got you, I've got you. And the people from the head office came back, you know, license plate, ABC, 123, owner, Mary Johnson, blah, blah, blah. The exact same surname of the fake name that I gave. You want to know whether there's a higher power looking after you? It's a clear indication right there. I finally started to think about getting some help. Someone suggested to me that I might want to try Alcoholics Anonymous, and I remember ringing AA. This was after I got charged for my fifth DUI. I was on bail for my third and fourth DUI when I was charged for my fifth. Not too clever. In fact, the policeman, when he had me in the back of the car, turned around mid-trip back to the police station and said, "Didn't we just charge you for DUI 2 days ago?" And I said, "Yeah. Yeah, you did." And he said, "You'd have to be an absolute idiot, wouldn't you?" He didn't use the word idiot. And I said, "Yeah. Yeah, I am." I just believed it. I thought I was an absolute moron. I thought my problem was I was a moron. I thought I was a fool. I rang Alcoholics Anonymous. I got some local meetings and looked at the list. It was Tuesday or Wednesday. I looked at the list and I decided that I'd go to this Friday night meeting near my house. And I proceeded to say goodbye to my best friend, you know, who'd been my best friend for the last 6 years and got drunk every single night. And you know those hangover mornings where you've got alcohol poisoning, where you're bringing up the lining of your stomach and everything's green and, yes, nodding away. It was one of those mornings on the Friday morning. And I went to work and I came home. I just said, "That's it. I'm just going to stay in tonight. That's got to be just as good as one of those stupid AA meetings. I won't be getting drunk. I'll just stay home." And I tucked up in bed, and on came this TV show, Beverly Hills 90210. Who remembers that show? I'd never seen it before. It was on Friday nights. I'm not at home or anywhere near a TV set on a Friday night. So I'm watching this dumb show, and the main character, Brandon, gets in a car accident in his mum's station wagon. Happened to be how I was charged for DWI a few times in my mum's station wagon. He had a car accident drunk, and his best friend said, "Come with me." And his best friend took him to an AA meeting. And I'm sitting there on the night that I'm meant to be going to my AA meeting, going, wondering who the hell's pulling the curtains and touching the dials, and I kid you not. They push on this sort of, I don't know whether you remember the scene, but they push on these doors into it like a school gym. And it's just got AA meeting on the doors, and they push into this room like this, and there's a big circle, and they all sit down, and the banners are on the wall. And one of the guys starts the AA meeting. "Hi, I'm John, and I'm an alcoholic." And I'm just like, man, God really wanted me in an AA meeting tonight. You know, he's televised one personally for me. What did I do though? I got so scared I went and got drunk. Back out, back out, back out. I ended up going back to court, faced that judge for the third time. I'd asked for two adjournments already. I was unrepresented. Steve, you might tell me whether that's a good idea. When you push all three DUIs together in the same case, not too clever. He said to me, "Darren, you've come again unrepresented, and look at you. And let me give you a bit of a view." It was the early 90s, so I had my mullet on. Yeah. I thought I was trendy, so I was a flat top mullet. A little bit like Joe Dirt. My liver had started to give in, so my face was yellow. I had roadmaps for eyes. In fact, I had a big black eye, because I was beaten up on the Saturday night because I was trying to, let's just say, get friendly with someone I shouldn't have, and she beat my ass. She was my friend's girlfriend, and you know, as I approached, I told you I wasn't very clever. And I had my favourite t-shirt on. It was a beer t-shirt, Victoria Bitter. It's bright green with the VB logo on it. And he said, Darren, if you show up here looking like this in 30 days, you're going to do 2 years jail. I'm not talking about little kids prison here, buddy. You're going to go over the wall into general population and I can assure you, you won't have fun. I looked about 12. I just told you I got beat up by a woman. I ain't having fun in 2 years prison looking 12 years old. And I knew it. Instinctively, I knew I wasn't going to live through that sentence. Something bad was going to happen to me really early, and I'd try and get back, and I would have been killed. That's how it would have played out in the first week. And I know it in my guts. And I got so desperate that I broke that vow I made to myself as a little kid. I went and told someone the whole truth. The whole truth. I went to my GP and I told him everything. And he said, Darren, it sounds like you're a chronic alcoholic. Have you tried Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, man, I'm not that bad. I didn't know what AA was, but instinctively I didn't want to be here. Whether it's the fear of intimacy, I don't know. He said, there's something wrong with my head. I keep making these dumbass decisions. He said, oh, let me see if I can get you in to see a psychiatrist. Wait in the waiting room. He came out 5 minutes later and said, here's the card. You've got an appointment in 2 days. How do you get an appointment with a psychiatrist in 2 days, Steve? I think we know. I went and saw that psychiatrist. I told him the whole truth. He said, Darren, there's no doubt you screwed up. You've got a lot of problems. But from where I sit, you're a chronic alcoholic. Have you tried Alcoholics Anonymous? He's the second man in a row to tell me that science, that medicine didn't have what I needed. Shortly afterwards, I'm filling in a form at detox. And I couldn't get to detox. Couldn't get there. I had my mum drive me to detox. And I had my little sports bag with my VB t-shirts and, you know, everything that I owned. The bag was about that big in my right hand. And in my left hand was my mum's hand because I couldn't get out of the car to get in there. I was so afraid. Fear's a really big part of my story. I suffered in sobriety from fear blackouts. Losing time through fear. That day I answered the 20 questions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the gentleman who was giving me the test said, congratulations, perfect score, you're a garden variety alcoholic, welcome. Over the next 7 to 10 days, we're going to supervise you while alcohol leaves your body, but we don't have what you need. We're going to take you to the most successful organisation on the planet for treating alcoholism. We're going to take you to Alcoholics Anonymous. This was the state government run hospital. I'm Australian. Like, I come from convict stock. The first 8 boats that landed from the UK had 9 Davises on it. Like, you do what the government tells you, otherwise you just die. Like, they kill you. I just believed them. And they put me on the druggy buggy, and guess what they did? They brought me to you. And that bus pulled up out the front, and you all came running. Did I get that right? Y'all? Y'all came running out like it was Christmas morning to open your presents. Y'all came running down the stairs like this. Yeah! And we got off the bus and this older lady, as I said, I was 21, I felt like I was about 3, this older lady who was probably 40, locked eyes with me. And she said, welcome. welcome home. And I burst into tears. I'd never felt welcomed anywhere in my entire life. I was always all alone. I had to be. It's my only defense. She said, come on in out of the cold, and she sat with me through that meeting. And you guys got up and told your stories, a little bit like I'm telling my story of my drinking. And I identified. As you told your stories, I cried. And why I was crying was because I thought I was the only one. There was no one like me in my family. None of my friends drank like me. That's why I was a loner. My 21st birthday party consisted of me sitting on a case of beer in my parents' backyard. No one came. My dad came out of the house, took a lid off a beer, took one sip, patted me on the shoulder and said, it'll be all right, son, and walked back in the house. I thought I was the only one. And that night I found my tribe. I thought I was the last, the lost and the least, and that night I found you. And most of you were sicker than me, so it was great. And I kept coming back through thick and thin. Through drinking and not drinking, I just kept coming. And a little bit like, I don't know whether it was you earlier, Steve, that talked about what I heard was meetings, meetings, meetings. That's what I heard. I'm sure they weren't saying that, but I think that's what I was hearing. And at 34 days, I went back to court. And the guy said, great. I thought I was, you know, this thing was going to be a get out of jail free card coming to AA. I mean, man, come on. And he sentenced me to 12 months weekend detention. And I drank that night. I started going to prison on the weekends. And I summoned up all that I had and gritted my teeth and clenched my fists and redoubled my efforts. And now I'm doing 3 meetings a week and drank it 56 days. And redoubled my efforts and put it in as hard as I could and drank again at 9.5 months. Lots of people find out that they're alcoholics before they come to AA. Some of us have to work it out after we come to AA. I didn't know that I couldn't stop on my own willpower and I couldn't hear because my ears weren't open. We've all got this guy at our home group. He's a guy that sometimes carries one of these. He certainly talks about what's going on in here. Probably talks a lot about God. We've all got one of them, yeah? At our home group. Scary, scary guy. At the detox, I rang him. That's how desperate I was after my last drink. I rang that guy. And I said, Pete, I drank again. Almost like it was like it just, you know, came and like a tiger jumped out of the bushes and got me. And he said, oh, why did you drink again? And I said, I'll be completely honest, mate. I don't know. It was like the phone went dead. I said, Pete, are you there? Pete? Nothing. Hello, Pete? He said, oh, sorry, man. Whew. I said, are you okay? He said, yeah, I passed out. I went, oh, what happened? He said, oh, I think it was shock. It's the first time we've heard you say, I don't know. So the great news is, you're now teachable. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to join a group. I want you to get a sponsor. Sponsor someone who's worked the 12 steps in their life, who's had a spiritual awakening and show you how to do the same. I want you to get right in the middle of that home group. Right in the middle. No one can take that seat off you. You deserve it. You've earned it. Get right in the middle because the wolves pick off the boundary riders. Get right in the middle where the wolves can't pick you off. And that's what I did. Through thick and thin, I stayed. I started to do the steps. I can't say that I started out in that book, but I started to do the steps. I had a really loving sponsor who was there for me every single day when I rang him in the terrors. And he talked me through it every single time. Tell me to breathe. Take a long, slow, deep breath. Wiggle your toes. Get back in your body. Everything's okay. Because I just wanted to run every single day. Eventually, I was approached by a man who was properly armed with facts about himself, and he gave me probably the greatest gift. He gifted me a really strong step one experience. Up until that point, I knew I belonged, but I didn't really understand what alcoholism was. And how did he do that? He picked up that book, like Steve described, and we went line by line through that book. And we got to the doctor's opinion. I remember it like it was yesterday. I can remember the colour of the wall. You know, I've been sober nearly 28 years, and this is 25 years ago. I remember the colour of the kitchen wall, what was on the kitchen bench. And we started reading the doctor's opinion. He started talking about the allergy. And audibly, I went, bullshit. He said, what's that? I said, it's not an allergy. He said, oh, do tell, Sherlock. And I said, well, I got a bee sting allergy. When I get stung by a bee, and many of you have a peanut allergy or a seafood allergy or some other allergy, and you probably understand this. And when I get stung by a bee, I blow up. Like, I get really swollen. If I get stung anywhere on the torso or on the neck, it's life-threatening because of the swelling, right? One thing that doesn't happen, Mr. Sponsor, is I don't go running down the street going, oh, get me some more bee stings. Sticking my head in the beehive wanting more. That doesn't happen. And you say, oh, it's an interesting perspective. I haven't heard that before. Why don't we look at what the dictionary says the word allergy means? And he pulled the dictionary off the shelf and he opened it up. Allergy. Physical hypersensitivity to a substance. Do you think that you're hypersensitive to alcohol, Darren? Yeah. Comma, which in like amounts is harmless to others. And when he said that, I just had this picture of my mother drinking champagne at Christmas time. And many of you might have a family member that's not alcoholic, that might drink normally. And my mother's not alcoholic. And in Australia, it's summertime. Peak summertime at Christmas, right? We don't have white Christmas, we have sweaty singlet Christmas. And she likes to have a couple of glasses of champagne with Christmas dinner. And she'll pour a little half a glass and it's a bit strong, so she'll cut it with orange juice. I've seen her cut it with Fanta. So we don't buy Chandon, we just buy the cheap stuff. And it's hot and she's going to be sitting on this puppy for some time, so she puts ice cubes in it. But what happens eventually, she'll have one or two, and she'll say something like this. Oh, I'm starting to feel it, comma, I better stop. Now, I don't know about you. It sounds very weird. I say, oh, I'm starting to feel it, giddy up. Let's go. Taxi, you know, party time. And what I found out that day is that I suffer from an allergy to the drug ethyl alcohol. Every time I drink, I have an insatiable desire for more because I'm in the minority. That's what an allergy is. My mum, 90-odd% of the population, drinks normally. She's in the majority. Because I'm in the minority, I react differently to normal people. That's what the word allergy means. I was doing battle with that word for 3 years, and in 20 minutes with that book and a dictionary, I had a really strong step one experience. We moved into the mental obsession. At the end of the day, it's my mind, my disease commandeering my mind. It looks like I'm just changing my mind. but it commandeers my thinking. It uses my own voice, so I think it's me, and convinces me to drink against my will. And how do I know it's against my will? Because that morning, I was begging to never drink again. The word obsession means a thought that outweighs all other thoughts. It gets so loud that my quiet voice, my spirit, can't be heard in my mind. I can't hear what I really want to do, which is not drink. And when we got through that chapter, I knew that I was an alcoholic. What a gift. In sobriety, and we'll talk more tomorrow. I can't wait to hear about your screw up, Steve, but we'll talk a lot about screw ups in sobriety tomorrow. But in sobriety, you know, life has been an absolute picture of everything that you can imagine a human being can get up to. And, you know, all the way through, I've stayed a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always had a home group. I've always had a sponsor. I've always continued to sponsor others. I've always continued to go and give talks at treatment and the like. And it's my belief that no matter how ill I've been, and I can tell you I've been ill, not just with alcoholism, with mental illness as well, that because I've remained active in Alcoholics Anonymous and that I've got well-trained feet, that God's grace has showed up. Regardless of how unwell I've been at times, God's grace has kept me sober. At about 4 years sober, boy meets girl on AA campus, I met this lovely young lady at an AA conference, and I don't know how it happened, but within a few short weeks, she was pregnant, and I remember having that conversation with someone, and he said, "Well, were you using contraception?" And I said, "No." He's like, "Well, maybe that's how it happened." Oh. And like a good Catholic boy, we were married promptly. And, you know, I thought that the fairy tale was on. You know, this is what I'm getting sober for. Married, kids, big job, you know, big house, hopefully a boat, a triple black Porsche, a Hemi Cooter. Like, this is what's in the plan, right, Bill? No. 64 Plymouth with a 592. And that's the plan. And at 6 months pregnant, we were presented with a stillbirth. And I can tell you that I didn't know I wanted to be a dad, but man, I wanted to be a dad. And there was all sorts of troubles in that very brief marriage. We got pregnant again, and 5 months later we were presented with another stillbirth, and a week later, she was gone. I've never seen her since. And I was left in that house with a couple of sticks of furniture. And I was so caught up in making sure that she was okay in her grief that I never, ever talked to anybody else about what was going on for me. And I can remember sitting on the floor watching TV, I was probably in front of the computer doing something else anyway. Porn was a pretty significant issue there for a while. Anything to not feel right. And my sponsor rang. And he came around. And like what happened in the beginning, you guys just loved me back to life. You came and took me to a meeting, you fed me, you looked after me. When it was time to move out of the house, you all turned up. You came and moved me to an apartment, and you were there for me all the way through that. And I can tell you there were many times where I wanted to commit suicide. where I thought the pain was too much. And occasionally I would ring some people and try and talk to them about it, but it was tough. Really tough. And I remember leaving a message for a guy once, and that night I just decided enough was enough. I couldn't do it anymore. And I went down the stairs and was about to open the door on the garage. I'm 6 years sober. And I had a plan. You know, get in the car, close the garage and start the motor. 6 years sober. And as I was getting in the car, that guy rang me back. You know, Norm Alpy. 5 minutes later. So it's my belief that I've always been carried through. Regardless of what I've done or haven't done, I've always stayed right in the center of my home group. I've always continued to try to work a version of the steps as best as I can. I've always continued to try to have a sponsor that I can open up to, and that's been tough. I've always had guys around the house every single week. Two and three groups of guys going through that book together. And whilst I may not have been well, I've been kept safe in that process. And a year or so later, I met Jody, and this isn't a story about, some sort of romance novel, but a year later, I met my current wife, and I've never met anybody as caring, as supportive, as encouraging. I told her 2 days ago on a text message, because I haven't been able to phone since I've been here, but we've been chatting when we can. I said, you do realise that I didn't know what the word encouragement meant because I'd never experienced it before I met you. Members were trying to break through the walls. But when you've got dissociation, anytime anyone tries to get intimate, you just shut it down. And life just took off like we had rockets strapped to our backs. And, it kind of felt at about 10 or 12 years that I started to actually get well. Our book says sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Man, it was slow for me. But I started to get well. I started to get, I was able to actually look people in the eye and have a conversation. At 10 or 12 years, Steve, I'm still the shoe guy. And life just takes off. I get into corporate sales. I don't know why, but I did. And I've got this ability to just be me in front of corporate clients, and they love me because I turn up with the attitude of service that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't care whether they buy my stuff or not. I'm trying to help them. And by 2015, we'd had two kids, which was great because there was a time there where the doctors told us that we couldn't have kids. Jody and I were told we couldn't have kids. And I'm like, that's why you took those other babies off me, hey? You don't want me to have kids? And, 2008, Archie arrived, and as I said, I'm adopted. I met my natural mother, when I was about 25 years old, and I always had this blockage about meeting my natural dad. And I had worked in law firms for many years before I went into corporate sales, and I had the means to find people, as we do, Steve. And I'd track this guy down, and I had his phone number in my wallet for over 5 years. And there was a day that I was sitting on the front porch of our beautiful home in Sydney's eastern suburbs near Bondi Beach, and the sun was streaming in, and I had my son on my lap rocking him. And I had the desire to ring this guy for the first time, and I rang him. I just dialed the number. Hi, it's me. And he was drunk. And I told him who I was, and he said something like, "Oh, yeah, I heard a rumor about something like that once." He denied it. Denied it. Denied that he was my father. And I reacted very differently because there'd been healing in my life. Now, I was no longer abandoned by him because I'd started to grow up. And what I did was I got off that phone and I looked Archie in the eyes and I said, "Archie, I don't know what a good dad is, but I sure as hell just found out what a crap dad is, and I'm going to be the best dad I can ever be." And I've got to tell you, I've done my best. Charlotte came along a couple of years later, and those kids just started to grow me up. They have a habit of doing that to children that haven't grown up yet, adult children, and I started to grow up, and I've got thousands. I could bore you to death for another 3 weeks of one-hour sessions of the scrapbook of mental memories that I have of the beauty in my life. The intimate relationships that I have with my family today. The fact that I've forgiven my parents. The fact that I can ring my mum every 2 or 3 days because she's 82 years old and ask her how she's doing. Do you need anything? Do you want me to drop anything around? In 2015, I was awarded top 10 global sales by the corporation that I was working for, and they paid all expenses paid for me, my wife, and our 2 kids to Maui for 10 days. Like, you know, that's a pretty substantial award, right? And on one of the days, they did the whole thing, right? If anyone's been to Hawaii, you know, the playing with the turtles and the scuba diving at the volcano and all, the whole thing, right? The whole 9 yards. And I took Archie with me because Charlotte was sick and Jody couldn't come on that particular day. And I can remember clear as day getting out of the boat into the water at the first spot, which is the inside of an extinct volcano where they dive. And Archie didn't want to get in the water with me. He's like, "Oh, it's too scary. I don't want to get in the water." And I said, "Okay." Swam off and looked over, and he's like there by himself. And I swam back and I said, "Are you sure?" And he jumped in the water with me. And I've got all this footage of this kid that's so lit up with joy and happiness. And later on that day, he's on my back and we're paddling in open water and diving down just a little meter or two, and I've got the GoPro on the whole time. And we get back to the hotel, and I didn't hear him say it at the time, but we get back to the hotel and there's all this whale song every time you go under the water and the dolphins are swimming past. And on the tape he says, "Daddy, this is the best day of my entire life." Why would you want to be drunk? The joy that comes from being sober. The fact that we can turn up as us and be real is phenomenal. You may have realized by now that I'm extremely grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a kid that wasn't going to make it. I wasn't one of these kids that was just playing around by saying, "I'm not making 25. I wasn't making 25. Today I get to live a life beyond my wildest dreams. The life of Riley. I get to travel the world with work. Recently, with my sponsors, not just blessing but encouragement. I started a master's degree and significant encouragement. And recently, my employer, my boss came to me and said that they've been doing succession planning, and I just want you to know that we're appointing you to the senior leadership team with the rest of the execs because you're my successor in this monster corporation. And we'd like to help you with the rest of your master's degree. No one was doing nothing for me when I got here, I can tell you. There was no one looking for me. No friends were coming around the house. Can Darren come out and play? No one wanted to be within 10 feet of me when I got here. And today, my life is so full with all of you that there's no room. There's just no room. It's not that my biggest problem's been removed. It's that you're in the way of it. There's no room for me to think about me anymore because I'm so full of you guys. The phone's ringing day and night. There's guys around the house. There's people ringing from 6:30 5 days a week. I'm at the home group. I'm working with them in the book. I've got kids. I coached Archie's baseball team. I've never coached baseball in my life. I coach corporate salespeople, so I kind of know how to encourage people, but I don't know any much about baseball at all. And 3 years ago, we moved clubs because we moved house for the kids. Archie got into this gifted and talented program, and we looked at each other and said, I suppose we're moving. So he could go to that school. And we moved baseball clubs, and I'd gotten qualified as a coach because that was the only way you could get on the field and be a third base coach for the under eights, was to be a qualified coach. And we moved clubs and they didn't have enough coaches, and they said, well, Darren, you've got the qualifications. I'm like, and that year I coached my son's baseball team. What a joy. To see that face light up. You know, to find out how to coach that kid how to pitch. And he's a great pitcher. To find out how to help him bat and be there with him all the way through. It's like, it's like this. And help him through all that stuff. And we were minor premiers that year and they gave me coach of the year. Go figure. Go figure. I'm truly, truly grateful for everything that you guys have given me. Now, I've talked a lot about the outside stuff, yeah? And it is inside stuff, of course, but, you know, kids, family, jobs, all that sort of stuff. But what you've given me is the ability to turn up in my life as me. You've given me the ability to be intimate with other men. Intimate with my wife, like emotionally and stuff. To share what's going on. You've given me the ability to walk down the street without having a fear blackout. I was 6 months sober walking from the halfway house to a bus stop to go to a meeting and two kids turned and looked in my direction. And I'm so afraid that I look funny, talk funny, walk funny. I hate myself so much that when those kids turned and looked in my direction, I started to walk funny. Because my legs seized up from fear, from terror, petrified what they thought about me. Seized up. Now, if you can imagine what someone with seized legs might look like walking, I can assure you I did actually start walking funny. And three or four other kids turned around and started laughing, and it was at that point that I went into blackout. Literally lost time. I came out of that blackout on the bus. Today I get up in front of execs in large corporations and sell multi-million dollar solutions, and I can assure you I don't walk funny. You might think I still talk funny, I don't know. but I don't think I do. I'm able to piece together sentences, and at the end of my drinking, as I said, I was just grunting. Most days I get to masquerade as a normal human being in my life. None of the people in my street know how crazy I am some days. If they knew, they'd probably move. But none of that turns into reality anymore. I'm able to discern. Now, I went to Stateline in 2010. Bob spoke, Bill spoke, if you remember. Bill said something along the lines of, on one particular day I found out I wasn't my thinking mind, and on that day everything changed. And today I know that I'm not my thinking mind. I can discern the truth from reality. I'm able to switch it off and get back into my body. I'm able to take two or three deep, long, slow, deep breaths and shut that puppy down and get back to today. To not be affected by mental illness like I was. To not be driven to do things that I don't want to be doing anymore. It kind of looks like I've almost grown up. That's a gift. To be growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And tomorrow, as I said, we'll talk about some fun stuff that Steve and I have been up to in sobriety. That'll be fun, won't it, Steve? But I want to end with a couple of things. When I got here, I didn't know who I was. As a drinker, I spent a lot of time in nightclubs chasing women. And another thing that would happen in nightclubs was that there would be men chasing men. And lots of men would hit on me all the time. I got here, I didn't know whether I was Arthur or Martha. I thought I might have even been gay, I don't know. Got no idea. That's how removed from reality I was. There's lots of great information in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to a guy in my home group who was a gay guy. I said, "Hey Pete, how do you know if you're gay or not?" Like, I didn't know. Like, I literally had no clue. I suspected I wasn't because I liked women. And he said, "Well, Darren, I think it's pretty simple, mate. Do you like men?" I said, "No." He said, "You're not gay." Patted me on the back and, "Come back if you've got any more important questions." But that's how removed from reality I was when I got here. There's a little poem that I love, and many of you long-termers and newcomers will have heard it before. I sought my soul and I could not see. I sought my God and he eluded me. And I sought my brother and I found all three. In Alcoholics Anonymous, by taking the common solution found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to my fellow brothers in need, I found all three. I found me. And I found my higher power buried deep down inside. I found out that I'm probably a Jedi Knight and I love the force of nature, and that's okay. But I've started to develop that relationship. And every morning when I read page 101 of the 12 and 12 and I look at three words, channel, I take a long, slow, deep breath in, and by the time the second long, slow, deep breath is out, I've made a connection with my higher power. I feel connected in 5 seconds. I read the word grace, and I remember that I'm here because of God's grace. It's not anything that I've done, especially in that first 10 years. It was God loving me, enveloping me in the fellowship and his love that got me through that time. And I read the third word, which is love. And I remember what my job is here in Alcoholics Anonymous, to bring loving kindness to every person, every creature I can, every single day. That's the answer to life. to bring love to others. And I've got to tell you, man, every time I'm able to do that, I get to feel that love as a byproduct of trying to love you. I actually get to be awake and feel. And for the first 25 to 30 years, even while I was 10 years sober, I didn't feel a thing. So if you're new or near new, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Please, please get a home group. Get a sponsor. A sponsor is someone who's taken the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the only program of recovery suggested in AA. And they can show you how to do the same. Get right in the middle of that home group. Wedge yourself right in the middle. And man, if you're an alcoholic, if you identify with that allergy, if you identify with that obsession, you're in the right room. That's all I have to worry about, the allergy and the obsession. If I've got those two things, I believe I'm an alcoholic. So if you're an alcoholic, I believe this is the greatest show on earth. So jump on the pony, hold on real tight, kick like hell, because you're in for the ride of your life. God bless.